Avast, you scurvy dogs! All hands on deck! Bring your buddies with you next time, mateys. Lend me your ears. Today's episode is a right carry-on and no mistake. We're double parked, so let's begin with... Carry-on Cabby. Director, Gerald Thomas. Script, Talbot Rothwell. Director of Photography, Alan Hume. Editor, Archie Ludsky. And music, Eric Rogers. Actors, Sydney James, Hattie Jakes, Kenneth Connor, Charles Hawtrey, Esma Cannon, Liz Fraser, Bill Owen, Milo O'Shea, Edith Firth, Jim Dale, and Peter Gilmore. This is the first carry-on script written by Talbot Rothwell to make it to the big screen, even though it is the second script he submitted. It's also the first appearance of Jim Dale as a carry-on regular, and one of the few carry-on films where Kenneth Williams felt the script was so inferior he did not want to appear. Oh dear. He was replaced by Norman Chapel. The battle of the sexes is fought out through competing taxi companies. Charlie Hawkins is the workaholic owner of Speedy Taxis. His dedication to the business is causing marital strife. Peggy, his wife, has finally had enough. She sets up a rival taxi company, Glam Cabs, as competition. Their business model has woman-only drivers in sexually appealing uniforms. Charlie's company cannot compete, and he is facing bankruptcy. He goes to a meeting to suggest a merger with his rival, only to leave in disgust when he finds out who the rival is. The situation changes when Peggy is kidnapped. Speedy Taxis come to the rescue. All is forgiven. The film is offensive on three levels. The concept that woman in the workforce is inherently funny, the idea that women use their charms rather than their expertise to get ahead in business, which also misses two gags for the film based on the fact that only men seem to use the taxi service in this town, and the feminist message of the film being stomped upon in the finale as the men come to the rescue of the woman. What? The woman couldn't coordinate their taxi fleet the way the men do? Or couldn't cooperate with the men to make a twice as effective force? The film fails because the finale reasserts the status quo of the opening, thus revealing the innate conservatism of movie comedy, where things must end somewhat in the region of the status quo. Today, most critical opinion agrees with Kenneth Williams. This is not a shining star in the firmament of carry-on films. Part of the reason is to do with the production history of the film. Originally, the script was called Call Me a Cab. All right, you're a cab. It was not intended to be a carry-on film. Midway through the development of this project, it was decided to tweak it into the carry-on series. The result is a film whose tone feels off. Director Gerald Thomas, and by this stage you're probably beginning to suspect the truth. Yes, Gerald Thomas did direct every carry-on film released to date. Gerald was born on December the 10th, 1920, a good Yorkshire lad, and he died in 1993. He started his career in the editing department and then branched out with his friend, producer Peter Rogers, to make quirky comedies. Director Talbot Rothwell was born on November the 12th, 1916, in Bromley, England, and he died in 1981. Talbot had a varied career before World War II. He was a town clerk and police officer. World War II changed that career into that of POW. He served in the RAF as a pilot, but was captured and sent to Stalag Luft III. He met carry-on stalwart Peter Butterworth at the camp, and the pair were put in charge of arranging camp concerts to conceal the sound of excavations. Many an aspiring escapee took up the occupation of miner in those days. When the war ended, Talbot decided to take up writing as his new career.
He specialised in comedy, writing skits for Arthur Askey and Terry Thomas, among others. The success of the Carry On films inspired him to write Carry On Jack on spec. Producer Peter Rogers accepted the script and then assigned Talbot to rewrite the script for Call Me a Cab as a Carry On film. Talbot steered the series into the area of bawdy comedy for which the series is now famous. Actor Sidney James was born on May the 8th, 1913, in Johannesburg, South Africa, and he died in 1976. In his youth, Sidney performed with his family in vaudeville. In 1927, Sid joined the Johannesburg Repertory Theatre. He arrived in England in 1946, having served with the South African Army during World War II. He quickly earned the nickname of One Take James through working on post-war quickie productions. He also teamed with Tony Hancock in a popular radio and TV series. Sidney said, "Comedy is hard work, and I am not really a comedian. I need funny people around me to get the best out of myself." He was never shy about his motivation when acting. He noted, "Stardom is no perishing use to me. If I had stardom, people might get the idea that I was too expensive and stop offering me some of those small character parts that help pay the old bank balance." Actor Hattie Jakes is a stalwart of the early Carry On films. Hattie was born on February the 7th, 1922, in England. Her real name was Josephine Edwina Jakes. She died in 1980. In her early career, she worked in the Red Cross and as a welder. Her stage name, Hattie, is a reference to Hattie McDaniel of Gone with the Wind fame. The Carry On team called her Mother Superior. Actor Kenneth Connor was born on June the 6th, 1918, in Highbury, England, and he died in 1993. Kenneth graduated from the Central School of Speech and Drama and then made his professional debut in 1936. He served as an infantry gunner during World War II and toured Italy and the Middle East as a member of the concert party. After the war, he was invited to join the Bristol Old Vic Company and then moved to London in 1947 to become a member of the Old Vic. He soon realised he was better in comedy roles. In 1949, he was appearing in Talbot Rothwell's play Queen Elizabeth Slept Here. From 1958, he was a regular in the Carry On series and he continued working on the stage. History farped about like a limp salmon in walking shorts on February the 14th, Harold Wilson became leader of the Labour Party in the UK. August the 5th, the US, UK and Russia signed the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. September the 18th, rioters burnt down the British Embassy in Jakarta to protest the formation of Malaysia. October the 19th, Alec Douglas Hume became Prime Minister of the UK. November the 23rd, the first episode of the TV show Doctor Who screened. It's a TV show. It's science fiction. It'll never last. December the 12th, Kenya gained independence from the UK. It may be true you don't care Jack, but you better Carry On Jack. Director, Gerald Thomas. Script, Talbot Rothwell. Director of Photography, Alan Hume. Editor, Archie Ludsky. Music, Eric Rogers. Actors, Kenneth Williams, Bernard Cribbins, Juliet Mills, Charles Hawtrey, Donald Houston, Percy Herbert, Jim Dale, Patrick Cargill, Ed Devereaux, Peter Gilmore, Anton Rogers, Pat Gorman, and Guy Standeven. As Family Guy pointed out, the poop deck is misnamed. It is the early 19th century. Mr. Poop-Decker has his clothes and commission to the good ship Venus stolen. It turns out all right because he is press-ganged into service on that vessel. The person who stole his clothes is also on board. She was the barmaid of the tavern that serves the brandy that gave him a splitting headache. She is searching for her Jolly Roger, and No, the Carry On crew don't pursue that gag, who is rumoured to have been captured by the Spanish. In reality, he has turned his hand to piracy, a different kind of rogering. The captain of the Venus, under orders from the Admiralty, is to pursue French and Spanish shipping. He does this as slowly as possible. Under doctor's orders, of course. The Carry On films break out into a rash of colour and a parody of the historical epic adventure genres. The impression I got was that everyone involved was happy to be involved in a project that actually had a budget for a change. DOP Alan Hume was born on October 16, 1924, in London, and he died in 2010. Alan started as a clapper boy with Corder Films, moved to CineGuild to become a chief camera operator, and finally became a prolific DOP. Composer Eric Rogers was born on September 25, 1921, in Halifax, England, and he died in 1981. Eric was taught how to play church organ. During World War II, he played piano in return for free beer. After the war, he created his own orchestra that had residency at the Orchid Room in the London Tocadero. In 1960, his orchestration of the musical Oliver had its premiere in London. This led to offers to conduct film scores, which in turn led to offers to write film scores. Actor Kenneth Williams was born on February 22, 1926, in London, England, and he died in 1988. I have to admit I noticed him as an actor cropping up in the Carry On series, but I took no notice of him until I became interested in the work of playwright Joe Orton. Refer the book and film Prick Up Your Ears, 1987. He managed to sidestep his family's objections to becoming an actor when he was drafted into the army for World War II and worked in the Combined Services Entertainment Unit. When demobbed, he began work as a professional actor. He died in ambiguous circumstances from an overdose, making his last words the diary entry, "Oh, what's the bloody use?" Although we must keep in mind his attitude to quotes. The nice thing about quotes is that they give us a nodding acquaintance with the originator, which is often socially impressive. Bear that in mind when you hear him say, "All problems have to be solved eventually by oneself. That's where all your lovely John Donne stuff turns out to be a load of crap, because in the last analysis, a man is an island." Of acting, he said, "The thing to do, in any circumstance, is to appear to know exactly what you are doing and at the same time convey casual doubts about the abilities of everyone else and undermine their confidence." I would like him to be remembered for his penetrating film criticism. This, Dr. Zhivago, 1965, may be the great Russian novel, but it's a pain in the ass as a film. Actor Bernard Cribbins was born on December 29, 1928, in Aldenham, England. A successful actor since the age of 14, he is a chap who keeps cropping up in UK films and television shows, including a bit of backward engineering when he appeared in the Doctor Who films of the 60s and then got a regular part in the TV series in 2005. In the early 60s, he was a key member of the Carry On series. Actor Juliet Mills was born on November 21, 1941, in London, England. Juliet grew up surrounded by famous actors, like her parents, or Rex Harrison, David Niven, and Marlon Brando. Her godmother was Vivian Leigh, and her godfather was Noel Coward. Juliet won her first Tony Award in 1960 for Five Finger Exercise. She had premiered the role in London in 1958, and then the production moved to Broadway in New York for a 1959 season. Juliet is mostly remembered for her TV work, particularly the 1970-71 sitcom Nanny and the Professor. Actor Charles Hawtrey was born on November 30, 1914, in Hounslow, England, and he died in 1988. Charles took his stage name from Sir Charles Hawtrey, and encouraged people to think they were related. He started his career as a boy soprano and made several records. This proved a gateway into radio. He made his stage debut at the age of 11 in a fairy play, appropriate because Charles was gay. He studied at the Italia Conti Academy of Theatre Arts in London. While studying, he debuted in his first film, Tell Your Children, 1922. By the mid-30s, Charles was getting attention for a comedy sense not unworthy of his famous name, on stage and screen. As World War II approached, Charles was utilizing his musical skills in reviews and on record. He was also appearing on radio and directing plays on the West End. The hint of things to come occurred in 1942. Charles had been appearing in the Will Hayes series of films. He asked Will for larger roles, and Will fired him. The immediate reaction of Charles was to direct two films. He'd show them. The 50s was a decade best forgotten in his career. Things perked up with the TV series The Army Game, based on the movie Private's Progress, 1956. The TV series was turned into the film I Only Asked, 1958, which led to Charles's appearance in Carry On Sergeant, 1958. Through the Carry On series, Charles explored all the possibilities between wimpish and effeminate. In 1966, director Gerald Thomas explained his use of Charles. In the beginning, Charles's shock entrance was an accident, but realizing the potential, I set out deliberately to shock, and now his first appearance is carefully planned. Apart from the comedy value of the unlikely role he plays, I'm careful to arrange the right timing for his actual appearance so that the two factors combined surprise the audience into instant risibility. I note here that Gerald doesn't mention Charles's drinking problem. He was dropped from the series in 1972. Producer Peter Rogers explained, "He became rather difficult and impossible to deal with because he was drinking a lot. We used to feed him black coffee before he would go on. It really became clear that we were wasting time." Charles told a different story. He said he was fired for daring to demand star billing in the Carry On Christmas TV special. When this was refused, he quit. Births were the lifebuoy on the stormy waters of life. On February the 19th, Seal, the British singer. March the 11th, Alex Kingston, the US actor. March the 12th, Jake Webb, the British actor. March the 20th, David Thewlis, the British actor. June the 1st, David Westhead, the British actor. June the 6th, Jason Isaacs, the British actor. June the 25th, George Michaels, the British singer-songwriter who died in 2016. June the 29th, Rupert Graves, the British actor. To round out the program, there is the short film A Boy Goes Cycling, director unknown. This documentary starts with an admonition to drivers to watch out for cyclists. The rest of the film follows cycle training for children in Britain. Probably the most important aspect of this training is that schools don't allow pupils to cycle to school until they have gained proficiency and passed the test. This is a carrot and stick approach. The goal, the carrot, is gaining proficiency. The stick is to have to walk to school until proficiency is attained. Alan and David are under the stick. They sign up for the school cycling program. They are given lessons in mechanics, practice cycle control, and learn the rules of the road. Practice, 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 until the day of the test, overseen by a police sergeant. Next episode takes us to the England of 1898. Was there an England in 1898? Somewhere underneath those dark satanic mills? Become a Buzzsprout or Patreon supporter to access all that lovely bonus content free of my atrocious puns. Buy Movie Chronicles 1907 to feel the wrath of a decade long denied. Until next time, watch out, for Queen Victoria rides again.